everybody. Glad you're here. And we'll start off our meeting as we always do with self-introductions of both, just in case there are some new people. And I'll go to my left.
Bethany Wild with Cuyahoga. And I'm going to pass around the mic. Sorry.
Todd Eplin, West Virginia Division of Highway.
Mike Payne, Lawrence County Transit.
Todd Thompson, ODOT District 9.
Jennifer Woodall, Tri-State Transit Authority.
Ralph Klein, Lawrence County.
Patrick Lyon, Lawrence County Engineer.
Joe Callahan, Inspector Transportation.
Thomas Witt, KYTC.
Randy Wheeler, City of Ashland.
I'm Tara Greathouse with the REC, the Charleston MPO.
Matt Selhurst with HDR.
Jody Sigmund, Cuyahoga.
Brian Carr, West Virginia Division of Highway, United Division of Charleston.
Shawna Engel-Smith, FHWA, West Virginia Division.
Alex Vanderpool, Boyd County Kids Board.
Kelly Ward, South Carolina.
Luke Stapleton, South Carolina.
Laura Tool, FHWA, Ohio Division. And I just want to mention that I am now the Cuyahoga point of contact. It used to be Noel Malo, but we switched, so I'll be a lot more.
Welcome.
I'm Terry Sicking. I'm with Cuyahoga.
I'm Kelly Solomon with Cuyahoga.
And I'm Paul Davis. I'm with the Transit Authority here in Huntington. Okay, well, let's go ahead to item number two on our agenda. Motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting as distributed.
Like it, Paul.
You like it? All right. Does anybody else like it? Yeah, all in favor of liking it? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Well, evidently we like it. So that's all good stuff. Okay, item number three, Cuyahoga Transportation Studies, projects update. Via the telephone, and I believe we have Chet Parsons, the first thing on the list.
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm opening up the presentation right now so that I can lead you through it. Are you seeing it on the screen there?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm Chet Parsons. I'm a senior planner with AECOM, and we are. This is actually the final presentation for the TAC on the street flooding mitigation plan. We have been working with Salim and Bethany and the others there at the MPO for about 18 months, a little over that, to develop this this plan to address transportation issues as well as flooding in nuisance areas, the five underpasses at the CSX tracks, as well as surface areas along 3rd Avenue and 5th Avenue. Between basically Hal Greer and about 25th Street. So we have the title slide. If we can go to the next slide, project purpose. Our initial goals in this project were to, number one, evaluate and address mobility issues due to these flooding problems and closures that periodically happen when flooding occurs. Two, to identify possible stormwater improvements that could positively impact the traffic network and try and reduce some of that surface water before it impacts transportation. Number three, look at some possible mitigation tools and best practices that we can utilize so that when future storm events happen, we can head that off before any damage or inconvenience occurs within the city of Huntington and the larger region. And then finally, look at all of the traffic, both motorized and non-motorized, through those identified problem areas and see if there was anything that we could do to improve and provide more options for travelers, whether that's through the Marshall campus or the downtown CBD, or in the areas immediately around the CSX tracks. So next slide. The approach, we looked at it in basically four different phases. The first two, circulation and stormwater and green infrastructure, were simultaneously undertaken. We looked at multimodal transportation issues dealing with the the highway network, bicycle and pedestrian facilities, where people were coming from, where they were heading, and what those connections look like. We also incorporated a lot of work with the Kiowa traffic model, the TransCAD model, and we're able to utilize that to test some closures in specific areas, as well as what the impacts were to the overall system. At the same time, we developed a stormwater model, an H&H model, to take a look at what the existing stormwater system was and come up with some recommendations and alternatives to test on how that stormwater system could be improved so that future events don't cause the extent of damage that they have in the past. Once we had an idea of what those recommendations might be, we wanted to look at how to actually make that a reality. So we looked at tools for local governments, whether it's Kiowa or the City of Huntington or Cabell County or other agencies, to actually make these plans happen in the future, and how to use the multitude of funding opportunities to leverage additional dollars to put into this down the road. And then finally, public participation. We had a great steering committee that met on a regular basis throughout the project time period and gave us some great key information to make the best decisions we could. And I would use this opportunity to especially highlight the participation from Gordon Mary from Cabell County EMS. He did a great job and provided a lot of insight to what types of situations his crew found themselves in when some of the flooding happened around the underpasses in particular. Next slide. Transportation and circulation. One of the things we did with the traffic model was to simulate closures. So if you see the seven X's on the screen, those were all the locations where we did either a single closure or a combination of closures to simulate what happens when a flooding event happens. And most typically, we've heard, as we look back through over time, all the way back to 1937 when the major flood happened there, mostly 10th Street, 8th Street, and Hal Greer were the ones that were majorly impacted on most occasions. We've seen a lot of flooding on 3rd and 5th Avenue as well in more recent times. Next slide. So with each one of those closures, we came up with, I believe, 13 different scenarios, and we tested using the traffic model what would happen in each of those scenarios when the various closures happen. So the one that's highlighted on the screen, if you hit forward, I think, Jody, you should have a pop-out there for scenario four. This is what would happen if we had a closure just on 16th Street. So you can see the volume there at zero for 16th Street, and on the right side, the impacts. This is what would happen to each of the other locations, whether that was the underpasses or 3rd and 5th Avenues, in terms of where that traffic would go when Hal Greer was closed. So you could see the 10,000 additional cars on 20th Street was the major impact when that closure happened. Next slide. We did some visualization of each of the impacts from the different scenarios that were tested. So this one is scenario four, what would happen if you close 16th Street. So the data you saw on the last slide is shown here in graphic format. You can see where 16th Street is highlighted, there is no traffic volume, so all of the color is gone. All of the blue lines are the different volumes and the levels of congestion. So the thicker the line, the more volume of traffic there is, and the darker it gets, the more congested it is. So you can really see the impacts of closing 16th Street on 10th and 20th, those are both really, really thick and dark. So that means it's high traffic volumes, high congestion. And we did this for each of the scenarios. Next slide. Just for reference, this is scenario 13. So what happens if you close all five underpasses and both 3rd and 5th Avenue in the problem areas? You can see that a lot of the daily volumes revert to 1st Street, as well as going back across US 52 over to Ohio and coming back into downtown from across the river. or heading up on US 60 on the east end of town and doing the same thing. So really gives you and toggling between these different scenarios gives you a good snapshot of what happens to the traffic. Next slide. So this is when we looked at the stormwater volumes and what the causes were of some of these problems. It's a two-stage issue. First of all, you have when you have major rain events, you have upwelling from underneath. So there's all the pipes that are underground that haven't been regularly maintained, I think, for many reasons over the years. And so they have silt deposits and other things, just poor sizes now to accommodate the growth and development that's happened in Huntington. So when you have a major rain event, water comes up from underneath the upwelling that you see. And then also you have all of the impervious surfaces and the excess water runoff from the paved areas and places that water cannot penetrate back into the ground, running through the street and into the stormwater system from up top. So the combination of those two gives you surface flooding. And that's really what happens in a lot of these areas, especially the underpasses in those low-lying areas around town. Next slide. So through the stormwater modeling effort, we modeled, I believe, six different alternatives for ways to impact stormwater flooding and things we could do to lessen the impacts on the system. So for each alternative, we looked at what the impacts were to the underpasses, what the impacts were to localized flooding, like the areas along 3rd Avenue and 5th Avenue, and then does the alternative reduce the number of events per year according to the Sanitary Board's long-term control plan? And then finally, what does the alternative do to water quality overall? Next slide. A couple highlights of that analysis. We did look at what would happen if you could just store the excess water. And through the modeling effort, we came up with a number that you would need a total storage capacity of 7 million gallons for events like these. I believe this was a three-year storm. It was about 2.5 inches of excess rain. You would need 7 million gallons. So this the picture on the slide there is a 1 million gallon tank. So you can imagine the amount of surface storage necessary to maintain for just one storm event. So this isn't a solution in itself. It could be a combination down the road. Next slide. We looked at different types of green infrastructure improvements, including permeable alleyways, where there isn't a lot of traffic, but there's opportunity to provide excess recharge areas. We looked at permeable pavement. One of the examples that Sherry Wilkins likes to talk about is the cookout on 5th Avenue has some permeable pavement in it. If you go in there, you can see the difference in the pavement, and that's where water can actually get back through the paved surface back into the recharge area. Other ways to look at green infrastructure are some bioretention, whether that's in the median areas or in some neighborhoods. You have some common areas that you can incorporate some recharge opportunities. And then also looking at street trees and ways to get water back into the ground there. So as you can see from the alternatives, there wasn't really a solution just with green infrastructure for anything, but you saw vast improvements to water quality. Next slide. And I won't keep you much longer. This is the final alternative that made the most sense cost-wise and impacts-wise. This was optimized alternative number one, and it really showed improvements to the underpasses in particular, as well as a reduction in the number of events per year and the improvements of water quality. And it was a combination of different improvements that also built in some green infrastructure and storage. Coupled with stormwater improvements, next slide, we looked at identifying some complete streets options where you could take a look at additional green infrastructure options and providing some of that planted area alongside roadways to reduce the impervious surface, provide opportunities for more groundwater recharge, and to also have an impact on the quality of life and the traveler experience as you move through the corridor. Next slide. This is just, I'm showing you one example. We did a complete street section on Fifth Avenue. This is the first part of it, and it basically goes from 29th Street up to 13th Street. So the area from just east of the Central Business District all the way through the Marshall campus out to 29th Street. And this was divided into three different sections. We called it a business area, which was 29th to 20th, the university area from 20th to Hal Greer, and then a residential area from Hal Greer back west to 13th Street. The next slide shows you some of the cross sections, that the typical sections that we developed that showed what the improvements would incorporate. And just for example, the stadium area from 25th to 16th, we looked at three travel lanes on Fifth Avenue, so reducing the number, the volume of traffic because of the projected future needs for traffic in that area didn't qualify for the existing five lanes. So that's something to think about, the actual incorporation of a road diet in areas like this. If you reduce those number of travel lanes, you can increase the opportunities for some bioretention. We included a two-way cycle track. You can see to the left of the travel lanes there. And this is all of the complete streets improvements we recommended were able to be held within the existing curb limits. So there wasn't need for any additional right-of-way acquisition or those costly types of things. And we also did not recommend any change to the utilities. So the power poles and the lights that you see in these diagrams are existing, and we didn't think they needed to be moved. Again, that incurs additional expense on the taxpayers and the local governments. Next slide. So this is the final area from Hal Greer to 13th Street. I'll save that for later. Next slide. Finally, we came up with a way to measure each of the alternatives with each other. So we came up with a prioritization matrix that looked at some qualitative impacts to the overall transportation system as well as the stormwater system, and we're able to come up with a ranking of each of these different segments and how these projects could be ordered so that Chris and others with the mantle of finding funding can go out and look for those dollars in many different places. Next slide. Once we had the ranking, we could look at projected future budgets and start to develop a phasing methodology. This was divided into four phases, which included some storm separation along Hal Greer Boulevard. The dollar amount there is exorbitant, and but we all thought that it was a good idea to talk about how much it's going to cost and be realistic so that elected officials can take these numbers and use them for their long-term projections in terms of public system improvements and other types of funding efforts. I think this might be the final slide. We looked at different funding opportunities from anywhere from federal highway funds to the USDA to different foundations and private sources of funds that could be applicable to improvements made during this project selection process. Next slide. Okay, so this is a final slide. What do we know? Maintenance is very important to regularly maintain infrastructure, especially the water and the things that you wouldn't see on a regular basis. Patience. There is no quick fix for resilience issues. It takes a lot of overlapping planning efforts, whether that's through the city, the MPO, neighborhood groups, and other organizations to work together to come up with options. Real numbers. Budgets need to reflect the real need so that everyone can be upfront and honest in terms of future dollars that are necessary. It's a real team effort. Solutions are not just limited to one discipline. So many times we'll see a transportation plan and that's all it is. I think this was a good opportunity for Cuyahoga to look at transportation and stormwater together and see what the impacts were on each system and how we could make improvements that benefited everyone. And then finally, it all comes down to community. When we're talking about flooding and closures and impacts to the everyday commute, this is a quality of life decision to make these improvements, and I think that's reflected in the recommendations of the plan. I'm sorry for taking so much of your time, but I'd be more than happy to take any questions if anyone has any.
Well, I kind of do. You talked about quality of life and other things. Is there any consideration given any consideration to making those two one-way pairs two-way once again like they were years ago, making them a lot safer for Marshall University, and I'm talking about between Howard Boulevard and 20th Street. And I know that's not the emphasis of your study, but I mean, if we're looking at this as a holistic, you know, picture, maybe someday we need to look at if we're improving, you know, bicycle paths and other things. Maybe look at a way to calming the traffic there at Marshall University, at least the 20th Street. It would certainly make it a lot safer. And we did the same thing at Coleman Square when we made that fourth and third avenue two-way, and kind of slow traffic down, make things a lot more pedestrian friendly, a place to be, and not a raceway.
We discussed that in the steering committee a number of times early on in the process, and it was the direction we were given was to go ahead with the existing one ways. But I will say that the way that we laid out the typical sections, the green infrastructure would not be impacted one bit with conversion to two-way traffic. And what we did, so on Fifth Avenue, the bicycle pedestrian infrastructure was situated on the left-hand side of the corridor as you're headed out, so that it was immediately adjacent to the main campus. And then Third Avenue was on the left side as you're headed back into town. So the bicycle pedestrian infrastructure was next to campus to kind of reduce some of those conflicts and safety issues. But again, the in between the curb lines, I think there's a lot of flexibility if that's a desire for the future to come back and look at conversion to two-way traffic.
Just a thought.
Yep.
Okay, any other questions for Chet? Well, thank you, sir. We certainly do appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I guess we'll look forward to hearing from you on Friday. Okay, Tri-State Transit expansion study. Gretchen, are you on the line?
I am, yes.
Okay, well, you're up next.
All right, great. Well, thanks for having me. I'm Gretchen Johnson. I'm a planner with Nelson Nygaard. We're doing the TTA impact study. And the goals of this are really to take a kind of a deep dive into the transit system, just to look at the ridership and performance, a lot of other factors of the transit system to make sure that it's operating efficiently and effectively. So the overarching goal is really to kind of take a look and see if we can, you know, redesign or you know, tweak routes to make sure that they're as effective as possible. So the first, so I didn't put any slides together since I know, just wanted to talk for a few minutes about sort of the progress of the project and just some overarching results that we're starting to get now. So it started off with a market analysis where we looked at the transit demand, which, you know, we find is a lot of based on density, but also there's a lot of transit need that we also look at that maybe, you know, people who are seniors or disabled, they don't necessarily live in the densest areas. So looking at both those high dense areas and also high need areas. And then also we did an early round of public outreach at the TTA Center in Marshall, trying to gather some input, did a survey, where we got some good input from people specifically on you know, what improvements they'd like to see, their typical travel patterns. We asked them about some trade-offs. So, you know, everything in transit involves trade-offs since you have limited resources. So we tried to understand where people's priorities lie. And so from that, we learned that, you know, people really want to look at this, the service, in terms of trying to get some more frequent service. TTA riders and specifically were kind of split with that in terms of frequent service versus longer service hours, whereas Marshall students really wanted more frequent service rather than longer service hours. And then both groups wanted to focus on looking at the existing service rather than trying to serve new areas. And from the market analysis, we did see that the extent of the service really does cover the areas that we typically recommend covering with transit. So so we're focused more on looking at that existing service. And also, overwhelmingly, everyone preferred more weekend service over more weekday service, although I think still the weekday service is going to be the foundation or the base of transit service. So so anyways, that's what we learned from the survey. And then from there, we had collected ridership by stop. It is a flag stop system, so we had to we used the route shout where they sort of have time points, what they call it. So we collected the ridership, or we put the ridership all towards the nearest time point, and looked at the ridership by stop. We looked at the ridership by trip. I think Terry printed out one of our route profiles that we did. So we did one of these for each of the routes in the TTA system, and looked really kind of in depth at each of the routes. And then at the end of that route profile, we make any sort of suggestions that come to mind. Some of them can be contradictory. Some of them, you know, you might need to do together, or if you do one, you can't do the other. So it's really just sort of a brainstorm of anything that might help the route perform a little bit better, or even just make it a little bit more visible for people to consider as an option. So that's we finished that the route by route analysis recently, and then we're moving into the next phase, which is looking at some scenarios for you know, what recommendations for the network that we have, and we'll be presenting those pretty soon to TTA and Kiowa, and then trying to also do another round of public outreach to have you know, riders or potential riders tell us which scenarios or which pieces of the scenarios that they like, so that then we can put together a final scenario or final set of recommendations for the system. So that'll be November 8th and 9th. So we're trying to, you know, figure out exactly how best to go about it to get as much feedback as we can, because we really do want this these recommendations to be supported within the community. And so, you know, get the word out that we'll be there early November. So does anyone have any questions for me? I think that kind of goes through everything I wanted to touch on.
There is a question. Bree?
Hi, this is Bree from the City of Huntington. I had a community group kind of visualize the route that they were looking at between downtown and West Huntington. Not that that is served by TTA, but just a particular point of interest that they wanted to highlight that isn't right now. And I was wondering if that's helpful to send directly to you. As a concept, I'm not sure it's feasible, but just as a kind of a thought process.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's stuff that we really like to take a look at. We love that, you know, the community, whenever the community kind of gets involved in transit, we'd certainly try to kind of take advantage of that. So, yeah, if you could send that directly to me, that would be great. It also helps just, you know, It helps us understand where some of the priorities we do, you know, we did do a lot of work to try to understand the major points of interest and major employment centers. But, you know, any type of information like that can help us redesign an existing route or take a look at trying to add service somewhere. So I think if Terry or Salim or either, or Paul or Jennifer, they could share your my email address with you, and I would be happy to take a look at that.
We'll definitely do that.
Sounds
great.
Good.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Greg? Okay. We'll move on. And thank you very much. Appreciate your
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Lawrence County Motor, Bicycle, and Pedestrian. Matt.
Thanks, Paul. Okay. So working on wrapping up a lot of the studies here probably in the next month or two. Just a reminder of what the studies consist of. There's really four parts to this. There's the study which addresses some of the issues with the new Ohio River Bridge crossing over and opening up last fall. We're looking at bicycle and pedestrian plans for Lawrence County as well as the city of Ironton. We're also looking at some traffic analysis on Park Avenue from 6th Street north up to Ironton Hills past the 2 interchange in the city of Ironton. Then the last piece was to do a sidewalk assessment, mainly on the curb ramps, sidewalks in downtown. So that's what the four parts of this study consist of. And we've been meeting regularly with the different groups here. We've been meeting monthly with our steering group. Our steering group is of the Ironton Lawrence County Action or Community Action Organization, with County Engineer's Office, the Lawrence County Economic Development Corporation, Cuyahoga staff and ODOT staff. So we did hold a public involvement meeting and stakeholder meeting in July of this summer and get some really good comments on a lot of our draft concepts. And then as we wrap up our final reports here, we plan on meeting again with the stakeholder group early November to wrap things up with these studies. That's what our schedule holds right now from any of that. Real quick, I'll talk about some of the recommendations coming out of the studies for each of these parts. The first part was a truck study, new bridge over the Ohio River. We've made recommendations for the intersections of 2nd and Park, 4th and Park, 2nd and Jefferson, and 2nd Street in the city of Ironton, and looking at wrapping us up in October. Just a quick view of one of the recommendations that we made there at 2nd and Park. If you're familiar with the city of Ironton, very tight, narrow streets. There's a big building there in hotel on one of the corners. We are looking at extending the roadway over to the northwest, narrowing the sidewalk up to allow trucks then to make that turn because there are conflicts of trucks making that right-hand turn in the north there. There's enough right-of-way or room in the road in order to do that. So basically, we're just restriping some of the roadway and taking some of the sidewalks. There'll be some additional look in the future needed to take it and maybe some of the drainage issues there. But overall, pretty low cost improvements to be made there to make for a better turning movement for trucks. One of the other areas we looked at is coming off the bridge, heading into Ironton, the new bridge. There are some issues there with the intersections. As it was built, there was a left turn lane only, and this lane here was a right through lane. This is a screenshot of the traffic simulation for proposed improvements here. So we're actually taking that left turn lane as backing traffic up because no one is essentially getting in that left turn lane. Everybody's in the right, either wants to make a right turn or straight over the bridge. It's backing everybody up over the bridge and causing a big delay. So we made making a recommendation to the city and to ODOT to restripe that intersection there to allow that through and left shared to have a right turn only. That way it keeps those right turners moving. But what it does is then on 2nd Street north of there, we have to eliminate that left turn lane because of opposing traffic there. But what you see here is we're able to make that improvement because we can make that turn lane there. There's room to add parking. The parking was eliminated, some of the intersection improvements there. And then it allows to put some tree lawns and trees down 2nd Street there part of a truck study. We've also been looking at all the bicycle pedestrian planning throughout the county and particularly in the city of Ironton. We did a lot of field work. We conducted surveys. So many of you here may have received a survey that allowed you to have some input there. Took those surveys, looked at all the other deficiencies and gaps, and came up with recommendations. We did some benchmarking that essentially looked at the different types of facilities that could be put in, whether it's a bike path, it's sharrows, striping, or a multi-use path that would tie in some of the other trails or paths that are in the area. We were looking at trying to really tie Ironton up with the eastern part of the county, with Proctorville and with the branch over there. So we tried our best to make those connections either along state highways or to find some county roads where shoulders could be improved or some new signage. Frankly, there isn't much signage out there. Just putting new signage out there to allow bicyclists to know where some of the safer routes are to go. So we've made recommendations. We're working on wrapping up the report that will be submitted here in a couple of weeks. You can see kind of a screenshot on some of the areas in the city of Ironton, in Proctorville, in South Point. And what we try to do really is try to best align or tie together the generators. So looking at schools, businesses, community service areas, tying all those paths or signs, sign routes together. So if anybody wants to see some details of that, just let me know after this. The other part I mentioned was the Park Avenue traffic study, and we're in conclusion of the study as well. We were looking at going from 6th Street north up through Ironton Hills. We did all the traffic analysis, capacity analysis after we added vehicles, and we developed concepts along there. Many of the cross streets warranted traffic signals along Park Avenue, 6th Street, 8th Street, 9th Street. The ramps currently have traffic signals. Found a lot of the crash rates were higher, so putting in the new signals is going to reduce that amount greatly. Here's a screenshot kind of what the improvements would consist of. So putting in new traffic signals, putting in some crosswalks, really defining what the street is as far as replacing some of the curbs, putting in better lane striping, signage, defining some of the driveways, because some of the driveways aren't defined very well. There's many driveways along here. I'm not going to really close any of them up because there's no other access to those, but we want to define what those are better. So that's a screenshot between 6th and 7th, and we looked at 8th, 9th, and 10th there. So we're still working a little bit with the economic development folks there. Eighth and ninth, come up with, I think, good improvements to make it before, but try to apply for grants for some applications. And then the last piece here is doing the assessment on the curbs and sidewalks, particularly in the CBD of Ironton. We went out and did the mobile LIDAR. I think I mentioned that probably the last time I was here, that back last winter. We were able to all that data to develop CAD files that helps us with Park Avenue, 2nd Street, and everything. So now what we're doing is putting everything into a big geodatabase. That way we can have everything in GIS and we can do the assessment. So we're currently looking at the assessment. We're looking at the profiles of all the currents. And to turn over to the city, then the city will be able to develop a ADA transition plan. So give them an idea of what it's going to cost. Questions or input or anything? But if you got detailed questions, I'd be happy to answer recommendations.
Are you taking comments?
We're always taking comments, but excuse me, but we're looking probably mid-October to wrap everything up, all the final reports. Like I said, we had a lot of draft recommendations that we presented back in July, and we got some good comments there, so. I have some draft reports now that I'm working on reviewing. Make sure.
Right, Jerry, do you go back to your picture on the end of the new bridge?
where the traffic was actually coming on after that. It shows, all right, you were talking about the alignment.
Oh, yeah.
Second Street Bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, so coming over here, you know, current from Second Street coming this way has a left turn lane. There's a through right lane there. And if we switch this middle lane over here to the through left, we have to get rid of that turn lane. But the traffic works fine without a turn lane there. Turn lane's not really needed. That it'll call the backup. Back on the Jefferson there.
So if someone's in that different lane and does not want to cross the bridge,
they can make a left here or make a right.
Well, I didn't think you could make a left.
Yeah, you'd make it feel like a left. It just wouldn't be a separate turn-only lane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. Nice presentation. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
I don't know. Bill, did we get you introduced? I think you came in just as we were finishing. When I think of Lawrence County, I think of two people. And Dr. Bill Davis is the other. Ralph Klein is the other. So you want to introduce yourself, Dr. Bill Davis. You know, we missed you as we were coming in. You did get signed in.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm thoroughly embarrassed you now.
And I was very quiet about needing buses on Sundays.
I appreciate that. Okay, item number four. We have amendments to the amendment number two to the 2018-21 TIP. And Celine, Jody, and other Kyle, the people to talk about.
I talked to us and Jody, Brian from Iowa. This is amendment number two. I think you have the back table. What's the reason that amendment is the addition of a highway project? Project consists of preliminary pavement, Phantom Mall, place on the I-24 in Cabot County. We have a project, we have two split line projects on US 52 in Cabot County. And also we have one in Wake. We have two projects on potential for garbage bond projects. Also we have an installation cable guardrail at the location at I-4. And we have also raised the awareness plan for Bristol facility in Wake. So that's all. This is how I talk briefly, but CTA or Mike, they can add anything. To me, basically, for a transit project, changes are for the transit authority has requested an increase in the value of all limited cars start for FY 2019, and these funds increase from 2.8 million to 3.6, including the local matching. For Lawrence County Transit, has requested an increase for FY 19 of bus and bus facilities by 9. Also, the funding also required for Lawrence County deviated shuttle service process. The funds are for 3 year cycle, 17, 18, 19. And what we did really, we removed the funds for a FY20. The agreement provide funds for 3 years. And if I can say, we have funds for 2020 and for the advisors to move that fund. Basically, all these projects, based on the interagency consultation, decided it will not increase capacity, and therefore these projects come from the conformity. Also, these projects met the 15-day public review, began September 5th and then September 19th, and we need you to.
Okay, is there a motion to amend the amendment or the TIP? Somebody has to lie.
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. It's properly moved, and we have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And the opposed, nay. All right, the ayes have it.
And another fun item we have, we need to read it to revise the process for our tip with Virginia. We need to add through our process. And the read out more to Alice Jody, team about the group of the project slightly, then we'll take Brian on the call.
Good, no, let Brian talk, tell what it is, and I'll fill in on the
okay. Let's talk about group of
all right, well, I'm pinch hitting for the normal DOH representative here from Tioga, so bear with me.
In your bracket, really, you have a handout or a full handout about the group of projects, what does it mean, and the list of projects from the revised, so we can get this group of projects for the, our current 2018-21 in Virginia. That's
the handout. Yeah, I was going to say, this is the handout that all the MPOs in West Virginia were working from now to put a group of projects together. We've been working with FHWA to make sure that these are acceptable groups. I can say if you Ohio, Kentucky, Maryland, they've been doing group of projects for a number of years, and it's time for West Virginia to get into the game. So, we were wanting to move forward with those. Several of the MPOs that I've been dealing with have already adopted the groupable project process. The long and the short of going groupable, and other states have been doing this using it, is that it helps us streamline some more of the, I'll call them routine-type projects. You know, do we really want to go through and have to have an approved vote for a clean and paint job on a bridge? Putting up new guardrails, some basic items that, you know, really is considered maintenance by, you know, to a large degree. And sometimes from the DOH perspective, you know, we get a project that's ready to go in August, and, you know, we need to act quickly and before the policy board can convene again to approve it. The groupable project process allows us to move quickly with some of those more routine items. So that's in a nutshell what it is. Like I say, as you kind of read through how the various categories are broken out, you know, and I think right now in the way the tip for FY18-21 for Kiowa has broken out, and I think it's even listed in here, the vast majority of the projects are going to be considered good. So, you know, again, we're wanting to keep the idea that the groupable projects more maintenance related. You get into some of the more extensive projects, for example, like a Tosha Highway expansion or something that you're looking at, if we would deem regionally significant projects, you know, a significant amount of money. I think we've been using it like right around $10 million as a threshold for expenditures for the amount of money for these projects. So those regionally significant, or if they have a significant environmental component to it, those would also not be grouped, but we want to make sure that all the environmental requirements are met. So that in a nutshell is a groupable and what we're proceeding with, and I don't know if the board, you know, the board on Friday has to actually vote to approve moving to groupables. I'm assuming that's the intent. So that, in a nutshell, is what the DOH is working for with group reports. And again, most of the MPOs in West Virginia have already adopted these. There's still a few more in their upcoming meetings. They'll be adopting them.
Brian covered it pretty well. The only thing I'd like to add is some of the projects, when they widen or add capacity, they're also not group reports.
Yeah.
Just want to add one thing. If you go to West Virginia project list, basically what we're doing there, we went through all the project list for 18-21, and we classify all the projects that fall under group of projects. If you look here, basically show you in the blue that qualifies for group of projects in the template. And as Brian said, the threshold 10 million. Walk them there, we can say. Has about to pick it up. If you want to look at the list, and look at Virginia, Ohio, just Kentucky, see if that really met the requirement.
I also want to make sure everybody understands that any project that winds up receiving federal money, it's, while the group of a process allows us to expedite those, Kiowa, as well as all the MPOs, will still be informed of those particular projects that may come out. They just wouldn't need a an amendment which would require board action. It's just going to be what we've always called an adjustment to the TIP. But the Kiowa, you know, the TAC, and the policy board will be informed of any and all projects that come out. So I want to make sure that we're not going to be not showing you what those projects are. They're still going to come out like they always have. It just doesn't require a policy board.
Okay, so we'll need a motion at the time committee to move forward to the policy committee for their consideration. So if our friend over here likes it, then we can get a motion. But we're looking for a motion to move the their suggestion on to the policy.
Make a motion.
For a second.
Yeah.
All right. It's been promptly moved. We have a nice second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. All right. The ayes have. Okay. We have another item under number four, grant anticipation revenue for vehicles. That's Garvin.
I'm not exactly sure what y'all want to hear about Garvin. Does anybody know what Garvin is?
No.
Okay. Our resident expert, Mr. Rob Watson, is usually your all's representative here, and he can tell you anything and everything you want to know about Garvey. I only know a fraction of that. Essentially, what Garvey Bond, what Garvey is, it's a funding tool that the state uses, and I think many states across the country use this tool. It's like any other bonding process. The state essentially goes out and borrows money, you know, buys bonds that we pay back with anticipated federal revenue every year. It's like any other bond process. This past legislative session, and I don't want to kind of get into the, you know, the whole road bond issue, but those, if anybody's seen the presentations, which I think most anybody in West Virginia has probably seen it multiple times by now, but one of the key components the legislature in West Virginia passed this past year was increasing bond capacity for Garvey bonds. I believe it went from $200 million up to $500 million. We have done Garvey bonds in the past. The most significant one of note is the Route 35 project, Mason and Putnam County. So with the, you know, this all this discussion about the general obligation bonds and all everything else going on right now with the state of West Virginia Highway Department trying to get this huge highway program out. Again, one of the tools that the legislature has allowed us to improve upon is the Garvey bonding process. Again, we went from $200 million up to $500 million now. And again, that's bonds that we would be paying back with anticipated revenue that we already get from the federal government. So it's not like taxes or anything like that coming on. It's just a funding mechanism that we've been using. So that's about as much as I know about the Garvey process. Unless Sean really wants to chime in with anything else beyond that, like I say, it's just borrowing, you know, money now to pay back later with federal money. So.
Very good. Thanks, Brian. Any questions for Brian?
We need a motion to support this initiative.
Okay.
Basically, as you see, if you look at your budget, to show what the candidate for the project to be funded for the West Virginia bond that will show you actually Cabell County, the total cost in Cabell County almost $3.8 million. Yes, the other member, about 300 million and Wayne County, about 107 million. And this is really the list of the project.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Yes.
To support? We have a motion. Is there a second? Okay, well, we have a second, right? Here you hold back. Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, item number five.
Yeah.
Angel List of SY 2017 Federal Obligated Projects for West Virginia and Ohio. Joe.
Annual list of federal obligated projects that we complete every year. Basically, it's a fact-checking log. Federal highways, these projects in the fiscal year 17. This is the state process. Construction gets started at least. This gets sent to us. We produce a list to make sure that things are going forward path. These are basically fact-checked through this list. For West Virginia and Ohio, these actually end in the state fiscal year under obligated projects, and the Kentucky side will actually end at the end of the fiscal year. We do it in December. This is the list. Do you want to expand on this?
Actually, this is the list. Actually, this is the year.
Yes.
It hasn't been obligated from the
This is
the rule of the team. Either under construction or completed.
For highways and transit.
That concludes how I thought. Thank you. And for Kentucky, actually, the deadline is different than Ohio and Virginia. This line for West Virginia and Ohio is December 30th. Kentucky, luckily, December 30th. I think the federal law took you 90 days from this certificate or federal. Then give us more time to work in Kentucky.
Okay, item number six, submission of the Calhoun's 2017 completion performance and expenditure report.
That's really for FY 17, if you see it, I think double the capacity of 100 pages. Basically, that describes the airplane completion planning activities managed by AOBA. To meet the requirements of the federal and state transition funding agencies from start of July 1st, 2016 and ended June 30th, 2017. And basically, that show you basically what we did to pay over for the last year. And federal funding, federal put the practice there, what we did. We have difficulty, it's been documented. Cooperation. Basically, read that one. If you have any comments, it's related to your project, let us know. But it seems to me, we met what we promised to do in the work program in FY 2017. And this one is due actually September 30th. We need a motion to approve.
Okay, and move to the following board?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a motion to do that?
So moved.
Yes. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. We probably move, and we have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Thank you very much. Okay, item number seven. And that's Terry. Okay.
The item is for the Functional Classification and National Highway System resolution for the ODOT project and to adopt the classification. This is an exercise that we do every 10 years following the census. It's just something that we always do. We work with ODOT, we work with all the other agencies to make sure that these classifications are correct. If they're not, then they go in and they submit the corrections or suggestions to say the functional classifications, but this has been an ongoing process, and so we're going to have asking for you all to support a resolution for us to adopt the structural classification as we have gone through this whole process. It's required through the FAST Act, the MAP 21, safety loop for all the transportation acts throughout the years. We've worked with this since they have given us the data. So in February, we actually, the FHWA approved the current functional classification system. In August, on the August 11th, they approved the current Ohio portion of the National Highway System. And really, what we need to do today with this resolution is, before it becomes effective, is to approve whatever revisions that they did and that Coyote needs to concur, which we have here in-house at the staff reviewed that, and I don't think there were no changes.
No changes on the totals.
Mileage.
The function classification, the only minor adjustment there and there just to open the doors for funding for the someday. Actually, these proposed changes in favor of Lawrence County to qualify certain areas for federal funding.
It's all linked to the advantage, but a lot of it's for economic development. So we're not taking anything away. It's really kind of the area that's not being populated as much. It's kind of moving some of the information, you know, all the routes and information, you know, all to the more populated and economic development downtown or urbanized areas. So we're asking today for the TAC to make a recommendation to the policy committee to approve these revisions.
Okay. Is there a motion to do that? And we have a copy of the resolution, but like, yeah. We can circulate that to give you a piece of mind.
Yeah. I can go make
it. I'm going to audit my home.
We just noted that last minute they were not included in the packet. So do you all want to?
That's fine. I mean, are you passed out or just want to see it circulated? Or is everybody want?
We can go make a whole bunch, make more.
Jerry, Workman.
All right, thanks. Yeah.
Question regarding, you know, corridor interstate status. You know, we have this debate of I-73 and 52. It's been federally designated for I-73. Is that a classification that's dealt with at this?
No, the designation has nothing to do with the function classification.
Requested at the end of August to submit some information about the transit asset management. And it was basically mainly through West Virginia that we needed to adopt these, a few items or to support them, and they supplied us the information, to be honest with you. And I'm just drawing. I don't remember. Do you remember exactly what it was? I don't remember what the, it was so minor.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a, once again, it's one of these exercises that they ask you to follow through the requirements through the federal regulations that we do this. And this is kind of a starting point for some of this information. Do you, Donna Chandra, do you have any information? I don't, like I said, I just.
Well, I will tell you, I'll throw this in. For West Virginia, the Division of Public Transit has hired a consultant to help with the statewide transit asset management plan. So I think there's some deadlines along the way here, but the serious deadlines are, I think, September of 2018.
Yeah.
So I think we'll be hearing more about that as time goes on, unless Chandra has.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there was an initial submittal of data that had to be done. It's all being handled through FTA. I do know that Bill mentioned that they hired a consultant. If there's some work on the transit side where you all are, you know, saying what resources you have, what you're doing, and that all going into the statewide asset plan.
For West Virginia.
Yeah.
I can't tell you as much about Kentucky and Ohio. That's what I know about West Virginia.
I mean, the big concern for the MTO is just making sure the communication lines stay open and that the state is giving you their data to place into your report.
We have a one-page document that we have to keep on file, that we don't have to submit it to anybody. We don't have to have it approved by anybody. We just have to have it on file so if they come to audit it, saying that we're going to be following these guidelines. So at this point, it's just kind of a preliminary, you know, step to working towards, I think, a more comprehensive plan for all of the asset management that we have to do. So, that's kind of where we are right now. This is all kind of new, so it's just kind of rolling out. We're kind of working with it as it comes to us. So.
In terms of funding, what we did really kind of very, so we came with support fund, rather than lovely more. Yeah, really. We initiated fund transfer for Lawrence County to support the operation for next 3 years, and that FDA transfer completed for 17, 18, 19. And in West Virginia, I think there is a request to initiate a fund transfer to FDA for the amount of federal money, $680,000. That request been made in June 28, 2017. And I don't know whether that's approved or not, but it's in the process. That was the request. That this fund actually supported from payroll funds with the ICD. That's what the
Okay. Well, we'll move on to just some system updates. Before I forget, I might ask Jennifer to jump in and help me here a little bit. As you all may recall, we've done this CAD ABL component with RouteMatch, and we have the really neat app now where you can see where your bus is at any time and all that stuff. Well, there's been a major overhaul and a major update, so we want to make sure that everybody here gets the opportunity, and it is an opportunity, to download RouteShout 2.0 from the Apple Store or Google Play. It's very user-friendly. You can just say, locate me, it'll find you, GPS, and it'll tell you where the closest bus stop is and when the next bus is coming. It's really cool. The only thing I wish they would have is an opportunity to design a route, you know, for your final destination, but we haven't gotten that far along yet. Like you do as Google, like MapQuest or something like that, when you put in your destination. But that will come soon. But it's really neat. Marshall students are loving it. It's a great thing. Jennifer, you may want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the 5310 program. Unless that's something else on the some agenda or down the line.
We have one.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that if you want to. I will tell you that the, what with Mike and Lawrence County and all that stuff. I know that we kind of broke up there a little bit, but we're still working well with Mike and Lawrence County. They're bringing their buses in to our station. Customers seem to be adapting very nicely. We miss working with Mike and his crew, but we're still like working like we did with Ashland and the other system. And you know, they're kind of on their own now. They got their big boy pants on and they're working on their own, which is a good thing. And I think that the customers are getting used to the new service, and Michael, I'm sure, will want to give them an update. If anybody knows anybody that's CDL qualified, passenger endorsed, that wants a bus driver's job, they need to see. We're having a harder and harder time hiring bus operators. And we need to find people that, number one, will work, and, you know, we can train them if need be. We normally don't do that, but they have to be drug and alcohol free. And I got to tell you, it's getting harder and harder to find people that will work. And so send people our way. This for TPA, the jobs are about $20 an hour plus benefits. So, and they'll get at least 5 to 10 hours a week in overtime. So they'll make $50,000 a year driving the bus.
Okay.
So we're having a hard time finding people, believe it or not, to operate our bus. So, nothing else from TPA I can think of on that. Good. Okay, how about Lawrence County Transit?
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. We've been going through the transition. There's been a lot of our riders that have been very accustomed to TTA, the buses and the drivers. And it was a tough transition, but because TTA obviously done a fantastic job. But we started the new service on July 3rd, and really everything has gone very well. You know, we're happy. There's still a lot of communication between us and TTA and the riders. And, Things have gone a lot better than I expected.
Great.
I think it's just because it was already set up very well. So appreciate that. Just keep it going.
Yeah. Randy?
Well, we're currently doing some stop surveys to see if there's any way we can change, alter, or streamline and do a little better. Just in a planning process now. We've had the same problem getting drivers. Three of the last five we hired, two of them didn't show up for this, and one didn't pass. It is hard to find drivers. That's all I have going on right now.
Thanks, Randy. Okay, number nine, Kyle with PMA Umbrella MOU.
That's John.
Okay.
So we actually have a meeting directly after this. It's a process that we're working on. The umbrella MOU came out of the recommendation of the PMA certification that we did last year in April. We noticed that there was an agreement between all three states, all the multi-groups and organizations that are in all the states together to all agree on how everybody was going to work. It's all been working, but there was nothing formalized to kind of put that into order and make sure there was a dispute resolution process and all that. So as part of that process, we are working on that agreement. We're going to have another meeting directly after this to continue working on that. That one's getting pretty close to being finalized and in good shape. And as part of that, we're also working on the planning agreements in West Virginia and Kentucky to make sure that they are up to date with all the transportation performance measures that have come out in the last years that we've seen. Really all that is to it. The umbrella agreement is very simple. It'll be signed by the state DOTs, the state EPAs, the MPOs that are involved with PMA, and it basically says everybody agrees to work under their agreement that they already have, that nothing will supersede anything else, so that Kentucky will do what Kentucky does, West Virginia will do what West Virginia does, Ohio will do what Ohio does, just to lay it out pretty plainly. I don't know if anybody has any questions about that.
Okay, well, you still have the floor. I think you have item number 10.
I do. You don't want me to go into the calculation?
Okay.
So this has been consuming our life for what seems like forever at this point in time. We have put out a number of transportation performance measures that have come out of FHWA. It started with the SNAP Act back in 2012, and were recently just finalized through all the Federal Register notifications, people's opportunity to comment, and so on and so forth. So there are a number of these transportation performance measures. We just talked about the transit asset one a little bit. There is the statewide metropolitan, non-metropolitan transportation planning rule. That is the one that's kind of dictating the other MOU that we're talking about that we're working on with Kentucky and West Virginia to update to make sure that we have all the information in there for transportation performance management. Highway safety performance measures, the pavement and bridge condition, which is called PM2, the system performance freight and CMAX performance measure, which is PM3, transit asset management, and the public transportation safety program. The safety measures were just, those got done a lot earlier than the rest of them did, and actually those targets had to be in by about August 31st of this year, so they're pretty recent. I'm not sure where the formal notification comes to the MPOs on what those are to have been set. I've actually asked Shanika, who's our safety engineer who's in charge of that, to find out. The MPO has 180 days to either set their own targets or accept the state's targets. One of the things that we'll be putting into the MOU that we're working on is what the official notification process is from the state to the MPOs and the MPOs back to the state as to what they're doing. All of this information has to be reported in the MPO's plans. So the long-range transportation plan, the STIPs, or the TIPs, the UPWPs, bicycle and multimodal plans, all of that type of information, it's expected that these targets for all these different transportation rules will be reported in that. So the PM2 is about pavement and bridges. It's focused on percentage of bridges in good conditions, percentage of bridges in poor condition, and then also the percentage of pavements in good condition on the interstate system, percentage of pavements in poor condition on the interstate system, and the percentage of pavements in good condition on non-interstate but national highway system, and then the percentage of pavements in poor condition on the same thing. There are a number of different calculations that are involved in that. Obviously, since the state is the group that is in charge of all of that system, they will be the ones that are collecting the data. They're working on refining what they're collecting right now. They actually applied for and received a Sharp 2 grant, so they've been working with our headquarters office and a consultant to look at what they have, what they need, what needs to move forward. And sometime in the next couple of months, they'll be having a workshop to kind of push all that information out, work with everybody to see where they're going to go to make sure they're reporting everything. PM3 is the system performance. That one has the amount of calculations that need to be done for these performance measures is frankly a little bit mind-boggling, I'll tell you. We, as Federal Highways, have been working with NREX. We are providing the states with a data set in order to be doing this. It's called the NCRMDS. We are also working on setting up pool funds to develop software and all that kind of stuff for it to be, for those calculations to be done, for a way for all of this information to be submitted. The plan right now is that there will be a national website, so as the data is submitted from each state and each MPO, that it will be available publicly for people to see what targets are being set, what achievement is being made, be able to, you know, publish reports, things like that. So for PM3, there's actually, six measures that are done. Interstate travel time reliability measure, non-interstate travel time reliability measure, freight reliability measure, peak hour excessive delay measure, non-single occupancy vehicle travel measure, and the emissions measure, which Laura will be talking about CMAQ in just a little bit. You can see here the publication dates of when those were published, what the effective date was, and there is a two-year phase-in period for all of these for when they need to be, when they need to start showing up within reports. If you click to the next slide. Oh. Okay. So the one that is highlighted in yellow is the greenhouse gas performance measure. That one is indefinitely delayed right now, which is why we're not discussing it. But you can see here, these show the dates as to when these targets and these measures and the performance information needs to start showing up in the MTPs and the TIPs and the other plans here locally for the MTOs. All of this information is available publicly on our website. We have a transportation performance measure website. There's a number of guidance things on there, toolkits, all sorts of things. And then we also have a number of NHI courses that are being put out right now that are available to take that risk-based stewardship and oversight, performance measures. Anybody have any questions?
I got one. Can you talk about the performance measures or any being involved in next to the plan? A lot of the MPOs have had the long-range plan just done like this past year. Most of those aren't doing it for another 4 years or so, so I'm assuming that these things aren't going to be included in the next, will be included in the next plan like 4 years out versus 2019.
Nope, they're expected to be.
It just it basically.
So what happens is that your TIP is usually what gets amended the most, right? So what the expectation is that when these dates are hitting, you're going to have an amendment at some point anyways, and so you will include that as part of your amendment, and then therefore your LRTP. So.
FHWA probably would have approved an amendment.
Yep, by the page and page.
The carrot.
The carrot and stick, yep. Yeah, so we'll be looking for
that. Is there any requirement to amend the transportation plan? I don't think so.
No, I mean, there's not.
Yeah, so so in Ohio, we have statewide line items that are similar to the West Virginia First Project. So if an amendment in Ohio goes through, that would requires the information to be added. So next year in May of 2018, the safety information would have to be added. And then in May of 2019, the information for the other measures would have to be added. If there's what we call an administrative modification to a TIP, which is, again, one of these lesser changes, this information doesn't have to be added. And then if that TIP amendment requires an update to your long-range plan, which isn't necessary, then you would have to update your long-range plan. So it's not until that document has to be amended would you have to update it. And the MTP also includes a system performance report, which is where all of this information is housed.
Any other questions, comments?
If you want to just go back to your first slide, I can provide some information on safety. Well, I know that William, are you going to provide?
No, you can.
I can just give a quick update on where Ohio is. Okay.
We'll
so, so in terms of safety, as Chandra was mentioning, the State Department of Transportation has set their safety targets by August 31st of this year in what's called their HSIP report, their Highway Safety Implementation Program report. So those are now just being approved by FHWA. And Ohio sent out a letter to all of the MPOs, including information about how they established their targets and what those targets are. So I believe you all should have received that.
Yeah, we did. And basically, they will support both of us started. And actually, here I confused. When I was to our meeting last Friday, they told me, well, we have 180 days from the last state adopted.
So,
this is what they mentioned, and then we confused.
Right. Okay. So, for safety, this HSIP report is due August 31st of every year. year indefinitely. So the MPO targets have to be set by February 27th of each year. So February 27th of next year. For safety. Right, exactly. The safety targets are annual, so you'll set those each year and report them to the DOT each year.
Forever.
Definitely.
until the federal government, i.e. Congress, decides to do something different.
Yeah. And then for PM2 and PM3, which are pavement bridge, reliability, freight, and CMAQ, there's not a specific report like the HSIC report where those are going to be submitted. So for those, if West Virginia establishes theirs, okay, so they're due May 20th. So say West Virginia establishes theirs May 18th, but then Ohio doesn't establish till the 19th, you'd have till the 19th, if that makes sense.
Whatever is the latest state of the three that are submitting, that is when your 180 days starts for all three days, or for all three states. Because unlike the Office of Safety very firmly said, we are going with August 31st, we are going with February 27th. The other offices have not done that. So
in West Virginia, I met the deadline August 31st.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a text into Shanika. I don't know what, since she handles, you know, that division at the DOH. I don't know. Have you received any formal? And I didn't think you had.
The only thing we'll receive is free of order. Yeah. We won't receive anything from the other state. And the only thing we got from order is.
Yeah. Well, I know that they've been in. I know they've been sharing the information regularly. I just didn't know if they'd done a formal, like, this is what we agreed on in house and what we, if they had done that yet. But we need to make sure that we. And that's one of the things, as we're working on the MOU, that is one of the things that I want to make sure gets established in there, is that there's a formal agreement on how this is going to move forward, because it is, so much of it is everybody is learning on the fly right now, that whatever we could do to make some of it a little bit easier and more regular and more, like, agreed upon, the better.
So, and ODOT has provided information to the MPOs at our Ohio Association of Regional Councils meeting just last Friday, if you were able to attend.
Yeah.
We'll be providing more detailed information in November, so we'll certainly be sharing that with you all. So just to touch on the CMAQ measures a little bit, again, those are housed within PM3, as you can see up on the slide. So the effective date of that is May 20th. So those are due May of 2018. There's three measures, as Chandra mentioned, within CMAQ, which stands for Congestion Management and Air Quality Program. So those are the percent of non-single occupancy vehicles travel measure, the annual hours of peak excessive delay, and on-road mobile source emissions. So we have established which MPOs or urbanized areas are applicable to these. So the percent of non-single occupancy vehicles and the peak hour excessive delay, both of those measures are based on the urbanized area. So Cuyahoga has an urbanized area, which is determined by the census. But then the planning boundary incorporates other areas that are foreseeable to be included in the future. So we're only focused on the urbanized area for these two targets. And since it goes into Putnam County, there will have to be a target for the Huntington urbanized area in the second performance period, which starts in 2022. So you have about 4 years until you need to start establishing these targets.
What are you supposed to do now?
Learn from others. We have at least three other urban areas in Ohio that have to establish these targets, and so it'll be coordination between, so for Huntington, it would be coordination between Cuyahoga, RIT, West Virginia, and Ohio Department of Transportation, and any other agencies within that that would be applicable.
I'm going to send the English person in the office.
So, and then the emissions is not applicable to Cuyahoga.
Come out of here. Yeah, still retired. Okay. Well, I think we've kind of covered items 11 and 12, unless there's anything else. Okay, well, thank you very much. Item number 13, anybody, Jerry Briggs is not here, but anybody have a report about the airport?
Yes, I'll do that. So for the elevator project at the airport, they should receive notice to proceed next. The Heritage Farm Access Road Study, they're having a public meeting this Thursday from 4 to 7 out at Heritage Farm. Thrasher is the consultant working on that. And then we also have a project coming up for this fiscal year, multimodal economic impact study for the airport. And we selected CDN Smith as the consultant to do that report, and we're working on a contract now. Hopefully we'll have it signed soon, and they'll be able to start working on that.
Thanks. Is Bree still here? You're kind of hidden behind Ralph. Good seeing you.
Not too many big updates from the city, just moving through with the process to get going on the various past projects that we have to sign MOAs and the Federal Lands Access Program grant we're working. We just found out, I don't know, I've been asked that last time, but we were successful in getting some funding to a pedestrian bridge across Corpole Creek at the county, Cabell County line. Create a connection on the Levee Trail there. So we're working through the agreement process with the very first. Just a lot of process.
Anything else? How about West Virginia DOT statewide freight study plan?
All right, I'll keep this part real short.
Okay.
right now, I know they're anticipating getting the final draft into FHWA about the first week of October. They're trying to get the project prioritization aspect of the plan finalized. The final plan is due after FHWA. That should be signed, sealed, and delivered there early.
Yeah, I think you have the next road to prosperity.
Well, is there anybody in this room in West Virginia that has not seen the presentation yet? I didn't think so. I personally have seen it about 7 or 8 times myself. I'm going to keep this here in a nutshell. If I'm to understand correctly, a rep from the DOH that is authorized to do the whole presentation is going to be here for the policy meeting on Friday. I do not know who that person is. Secretary Smith has been around the state. Governor Justice has been around the state. State Highway Engineer Aaron Gillespie has been around the state. A lot of our top highway officials are going around trying to provide the correct information to the public as to what this is all about. I'm not going to sit here and get into everything, but, you know, the bottom line is the legislature passed some certain pieces of legislation that has generated approximately $130 million through gas taxes, registration fees, et cetera, that's going to be used to pay down the state trying to purchase $1.6 billion in general obligation bonds. So the taxes are already in place to pay for all that. So there shouldn't be any taxes coming out for any of this. But That's a whole political side of things I'm not here to dive into, but that's essentially what this whole thing is in a nutshell. What this ultimately means for you know, Cuyahoga's area, when you actually break down Cabell and Wayne County, and the entire program of this Roads to Prosperity program, which includes general obligation bond, which is, again, $1.6 million, essentially spread out over 4 years, $800 million, $400 million. So $1.6 million over 4 years. The increase in the Garvey bonding process, ability up to $500 million. There's a turnpike bond, which, again, the legislature passed this past session, which allows the turnpike to sell bonds. And combined with some other public-private partnership legislation and a few other things that wound up passing. But in the great grand scheme of things, what that ultimately means, this whole thing comes together as the governor and Secretary Smith has been trying to put piece together. What that ultimately means is about $308 million worth of projects in Cabell County and about $170 million in Wayne County. That's a lot of money. So all these pieces of the puzzle coming together, that's what's potentially available to come to these. So how quickly all these projects materialize, we're hoping very quick. There's still many of these projects have a long road to hoe. If anybody's been on the DOH website, transportation.wb.gov, I think, there's a big red button up there. If you click on it, it has a list of every project that's in the state. I've got them all here if anybody's really interested in everything that's coming. But so I suggest everybody get online and check those out. Come prepared on Friday to ask whoever's here to do that during that presentation. Hit them hard with the questions. They'll be gladly answer. So I'll take any questions anybody's got right now and do my best to answer. That's the road, the prosperity program in a nutshell.
What about the critical freight corridor designation? Have you made those yet?
They're including those in the freight plan.
That's within the freight plan.
But yes, they've been working on it. They haven't submitted the plan.
Yeah, all the MPOs have submitted their list of critical freight urban corridors, state the rural corridors. So, yeah, all that's coming together. And like I say, FHWA should be getting our draft here in the next week or so. And then they have 60 days, I think, to comment whatever changes that might need to be made. I think the final's got to be due on December. Any other questions on the roads to prosperity?
Thanks, Brian.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to jump across the river here and go to Texas. Thomas Swift.
Okay, first I want to just thank everybody for all your assistance that you've provided with SHIFT, our new prioritization process that we've been using to develop a new six-year highway plan. And, we've gotten all the local input and we've scored everything based on the available data. And right now we're just trying to weave all that together and put it into a fiscally constrained six-year plan. So that's going to be presented to the legislature probably early next year. Then I also wanted to mention about performance measures. We did establish our safety targets on August 31st, and I emailed those targets to all of the MPOs, so you should have that information. And I guess probably with the other performance targets, we'll follow kind of the same procedure if that seems to work with everybody. And that's about all I have.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. I guess, Terry, you're going to give us a Boyd and Brainerd County project update?
Actually, Joe Kelly is
going to do that. Joe, that.
Okay. Good. That everybody should have a sheet in their packet with the Boyd and Brainerd County highway plan project updates. I'll just briefly go over some of the highlights, and I'll begin at Boyd County, 9-8400. That's the US 60 reconstruction from I-64 to Kentucky 180, all the currently being relocated there. And runway phase is very spacious, which is around 80%. So we have some engagement there. But we're still scheduled for January 2019 landing. So we'll get some money to get construction on that. And 9-8801, that's the safety upgrade, basically, per lanes of US 23 at 12th Street, Captain's Burgess at Marathon Marine. There. So we're still scheduled to land that in November. No change from that. We are on schedule to land that. So if you don't care, just put the page over. We'll go to Greenham County. Project 9-1073 is the bridge replacement project on Kentucky 244. That's the Russell by that bridge. Right away there is also near completion. We have utility agreements in place, construction. Waiting now scheduled for mid-2018. Thank you. That's a bridge demolition on Jefferson Street in downtown Greenham. The bridge has been removed and the project is still underway. And that includes some walkways part of the project and our schedule to be completed by the end of the year. That bridge service is a lot of pedestrian traffic. So we've got to keep them that bridge. We put back some sidewalks. 9-8509, that's the new connector. 07 from the Industrial Parkway to Flatwoods, no change there. 9-1732, that's the reconstruction of Kentucky 2, a 4 mile station. We're awaiting the geotech information. We did receive that, and they're working with the design branch to tweak the design to meet the requirements that we found out from the geotech investigation. And we do have a separate HSIP, which is the Highway Safety Improvement Program project that most likely will be next year, but we are having a meeting, as a matter of fact, this week to make sure that anything we do as far as HSIP work goes, which the culvert extensions, the guardrail, shoulder, it will not play. We won't be coming right behind then when we do our reconstruction project and everything else. So we're trying to weave these two projects together. So that's all I can do.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate that. Okay. Lawrence County Engineer, Patrick?
The county sign upgrade project and the curb sign upgrade staff project is completed. We use our own force account to do the erection of all the signs. The pavement workings on various routes, that project will be coming up in the spring. We have that completed. We have federal authorization to go ahead and bid that out. The 5 and 29, we have federal authorization to bid that out, too. I'll be doing those two projects at the same time. So we'll be paving about 10 miles of road with that project. The County Road 1 at the 5.35 mile mark, that is a slip repair project. We'll be going out for bids. That project has got federal authorization to go ahead and bid. And County Road 4 at the 4.75 mile mark, that's another slip repair project. And we're in the final stages of the design, so we'll be getting that, so we can get the federal authorization. County Road 5 at the 0.17 mile mark, that is another slip repair project. So if you can't understand, we've got a lot of slip repairs in Lawrence County. That project's under construction right now, and should be completed by the end of October. We have PID 97484. That is the Solder Road interchange, and that is the roundabout that's going to go in at the Solder Road intersection with Collins Avenue and right off the US 52 interchange. That is a design-build project, and we are out for bids right now. We have a pre-bid meeting coming up on the 4th for that project, and then bids later in October. We also have County Road 104 and County Road 10A bridge replacements. Those are two bridge replacements. We're doing those design-builds for the scoping. We're in the final part of the scoping phase on those. Once we get the money available for the funds, those are LBR projects, we'll be doing those projects. We also are finishing up some SHB load ratings on some of our bridges. We have one bridge left we have out. We also have the TID doing an interchange operation study at US 52 and 243 interchange at the top of the ramps where that is stop sign controlled, trying to alleviate some of the problems. If you get into the top of that ramp, it's difficult to make a left-hand turn, especially if you're a truck. So the TID has gone through, and since it is in with development and economic development, we've got money to go in and do a study on that, see what kind of changes need to be made there. So we should be awarding that later October, be under contract by November. And then 410, pair of 410 roundabout, we're still waiting on availability of our funds. That's not until fiscal year 21.
Questions, Pat? Well, another thing.
It appears that we're still waiting on the Corps permit for the trails. It appears they've got their technical questions issued now. They're looking, I guess, to update environmental. So we transmitted the environmental reviews that ODOT did a long time ago to them. They're supposed to be looking at it next week.
Not too much of an update. We have a couple maintenance projects coming up this year. We got a signal project on 52 that'll be going on in the spring, as well as a joint repair project on 52. And,
what's the location of the
It's, I believe, six different intersections along Sandusky, Charlie Creek, that whole area.
It basically goes from Grandview all the way up to Charlie Creek. It's all those intersections.
And really, the only other big thing we have going on right now is emergency project at Charlie Creek. Should be wrapped up probably the end of October at the early.
Any progress on acquisition bypass?
We're still working on it right away. That's really all I know about it. We're still moving forward.
Any other questions for Scott? Okay, we'll move on to item number 14. Thanks for all the updates, folks. We really appreciate that. That's one of the most interesting things that I've always found is that coming to the TAC meeting, learning about all the projects that are going on in the entire tri-state area, kind of gives you a better feel for what everybody's doing. Kind of exciting. That's really interesting. Item number 14, 5310, transit program update. Tell us what's going on, Terry.
I can start, but I think we can probably, a couple of us probably need to piggyback on this. We are in the middle of round four applications. We're trying to get them submitted. We're working with TTA right now. So once we get all the information from them, then we'll go ahead and TTA will submit those to FTA for funding and then do the ordering with the vehicles. So I think, like I said, we're pretty close to getting that finished from what I understand. So we're hopefully for the next couple of weeks we'll have that finished. Round five, we don't really have a date set yet, but the last round we added 2 years of funding for the funding cycle, and then round five will actually have 2 years, and at that point we will be caught up. As we became a TMA and we were first starting and learning this process, we didn't have a 5310 program in place at the same time that we became a TMA. So as with anything new, it takes some time to develop a program. So we're playing catch up for this point. But after this next round, we should be on schedule with the same funding for every single year, you know, a set amount as the FTA has given us. So at that point, we will keep everyone updated with the next cycle date. So we're working closely with TTA with that. We coordinate all the efforts with them with that. We've also talked about with that program, we have traditionally only purchased vehicles. And so we have discussed doing other options. And one of those is to provide additional services or transportation services where it's contracted with that. So this cycle, they're starting a pilot program with CISO. And so once this funding goes in, so like I said, it's going to be the very first time we're going to see how it goes with them, and then we're going to maybe go out to others. So Jennifer, I don't know if you want to go a little bit more into what we're doing with CISO, or, you know, because you're working a little bit more closely with them, and then also maybe something about the application for the mobility manager.
Okay.
One of you.
Well, with contracted services, it'll be a maximum of $50,000 per year. It's 80-20 match, and basically it's a reimbursement process for the number of hours that they operated for the 5310 program. Just gives us an alternative to just purchasing vehicles. It is year by year, but depending on funding and application submitted, if there's capital requests that are submitted, then that would come first over being able to do contract. I've quick version. The mobility manager, because 5310 program has just become more than what we expected. We're going to use some of the 5310 funding to offset the cost of a mobility manager, and he will be a TMA mobility manager, and what the goal is to connect folks who are still trying to get to Lawrence County over to Lawrence County, Lawrence County over to Huntington, over to Ashland, all of the things, the different modes of transportation that are available throughout the TMA. Do some travel training, variety of things.
Well, the only other thing that I would add is that the Housing Authority had purchased or ordered a vehicle the first cycle, I think it was. And the vehicle only had 5,000 miles on it. They came back to us and said they no longer need the vehicle. So we transferred that vehicle to CISO. And they are tickled close to death. And they had actually applied and through this next round. Or they are applying, so we were able to transfer that vehicle quicker.
Same thing happened with Tri-State Industries.
Yes. Yeah, and so we transferred those two vehicles to East Brazil, and they're getting a lot of good use out of it. So, but we kept them in Lawrence County. Anything else on 5310?
No, just like I said, if anybody has any questions about the 5310 program, transit, and the mobile with the vehicles, let us know, because we are looking for applications and ideas. We struggle with that because some people don't have match.
Right.
And we want the program to be strong and,
yeah,
and support our community.
Okay. Now we're looking at the sub-allocation funds, SPB tab, CMAC, in Ohio, Terry and Lynn.
It's just a brief presentation. Basically, the most important thing, if you have a project that needs to be funded, let us know. We have design, construction, right way. And then since our life is already November 15th, and the application is due December 15th, and we have a workshop. Terry will conduct the workshop on the October 24th. And please, if you have a project, bring it to us. Especially with Virginia and Kentucky, we have a lot of very over money.
Yeah, we also had a rescission. There's only money that taken away. There's another one scheduled for 2019 or 2020. Just to make sure that use as much of that as you can.
The applications are, they're actually, you're not going to be able to submit them online, but they will be PDF fillable so that you can type them out and print them, and then you need to send all your documentation with that to our office. So we're hoping to have that. The start of the cycle is October the 16th, and it runs through December the 15th, you'll have the intent, and you'll have all the other, you know, the applications and all the information on there. Like I said, our plans are to have them definitely on there before the 16th. So we will. I will send the email out to everybody as well once it gets out there with the link and contact. And Bethany has worked real closely with this project, too, with the sub-allocated funds. So if you have any questions, call Celine, Bethany, and I. We'd be happy to help you out. And once again, this is another program. We really want everyone to apply for the funding because, as Thomas said, there's recessions, and we did lose a little bit in Kentucky. The other thing is that each state has their own pot of money. So Kentucky has theirs, West Virginia, and Ohio. So you're not competing against each other's state. You're within your own state. So.
Great. Yes. You want to just roll right in the 16, the advisory committee?
Oh, I can do that. As Thomas mentioned, that we did Board of Greenup County Citizens Advisory Committee actually did not meet before this because we were actually out of town. But I tell you what, we met enough through the summer with the SHID process, I don't think we needed to. So we did, that was, like I said, their privatization process, and it was new. It seems like every 2 years they come up with no reflection, Thomas, but a new way to do
always
everything.
Improving.
Yeah, always improving. Okay, we'll go with that one. And so this is a new process for everybody. And like I said, I think it went very smoothly. We had a lot of cooperation with our local officials. We submitted all the documents on time. Thanks to Joe and to Thomas, they were a great support. Like I said, our local officials, we couldn't have been luckier. They got in there and they took a regional approach. They didn't just say, this is my project in Greenup County or this is my project in Boyd County. They really wanted what was best for everybody. And then some of those projects even kind of extended out as when you talk about regional into West Virginia and Ohio. So, you know, for the good and everything. Because some of them are, you know, can work with Lawrence County going over with the, you know, by the pedestrians, the bridges, and different things like that. So, like I said, we did not meet, but. You know, if anybody wants to see that, there's not on the Kentucky side, wants to see what they did prioritize or came out. I think we came up with that, I think, five projects. I think it ended up that we ended up actually moving forward after everything. So we'd be happy to sit down and go through the whole process or project or whatever. So just wasn't that.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate that. We're down to other business. Any other federal updates? Chandra?
I'm thinking.
Okay.
TPM is absorbing our lives right now. We just issued the NOFO on our Tiger and Infra grant. Gone out. They have, unlike most grants, they actually have a really long time period for getting an application. That. Those have been sent out to all the MPOs to buy them of those. I believe Cuyahoga's working on one.
We have one Tiger, one Infra.
Other than that, I don't really think. I've been out of the office for like 2 weeks, though, so there could be something else that I'm just missing. But other than, I mean, the transportation, that seems to be really absorbing our lives other than just the normal things that we're doing.
Alternative fuel corridor?
Yeah, something just came out about that. I think I have, and I haven't sent that out.
Yeah,
been in an email long enough to send that out, but yeah.
About that, so trying to figure out what, if anything, with that.
Yeah, there was an email. I just haven't had a chance to forward it yet.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, autonomous vehicles. Sleep.
Actually, no update. And we'll save it to the next
meeting. Okay. Well, on your agenda, you have future meetings. You can read those for yourself unless Harry wants to highlight anything. But they, I really appreciate that. That really helps us, you know, put things on the calendar.
I guess the only thing I need, that we at Cuyahoga, is that, you know, we set these calendar dates, but if there's some meetings that you have standing committee meetings on these dates or certain dates, if you could forward them to us, that way we can make sure there's no conflict. because, like I said, we do the best we can, but sometimes you just don't know when you're working with three different states and so many different agencies, so. And maybe you don't care.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else, Ralph?
I probably, under the reports, the Chesapeake Bypass, which by the state, instead of the Elder Bell, basically track did their original findings on it apparently, and scoring is very low. There doesn't appear to be a good opportunity for additional monies to complete out the acquisition. And our local concerns is always you got these other pieces of property and what happens to invade. That was always the issue that we had in the past is, you know, we didn't control the land and now the prices went up, whatever. But I think the big debate is going on is the, you know, a bypass of a little piece of Route 7 or the Outer Belt and be able to express that to the state. You know, somehow I guess we need to get recognized as an Outer Belt of the tri-state. I didn't know if there had been any more efforts or looking at the Merritt Street Bridge studies and things. At one point in time, there was some discussion, something that we could firmly take to the state track.
I'm sorry, I talked about Chris Tatum is really pushing that. Chris, in fact, he texted a minute ago. I guess he is planning to go on the agenda for Friday in Lawrence County. I think they're willing to, as a whole, is very receptive to help. Do we need to approve that?
Yeah, actually, the policy will go. Hopefully, the board will authorize KO to proceed with the big bridge study and environmental next year.
Do we need to recommend that here?
And we're supposed to have this piece of information at the track hearing on the 12th. Actually, I have a slide that I see from a Chris. What's his last name? Bidmore? What's his name?
Pridemore.
Yeah, actually, I received the presentation from him. Bethan and I will make some changes to the presentation. Then I'm going to share it with Chris. Then after that, we'll send it to you all. You're going to be at Goodall for the track hearing, right? The 12th.
Yes.
After we clear it from our end, we'll send it to you just to see it. If we need to do any changes before I send it back to Chris. But
thank
I
you.
Think the deadline, October 5th, I think, was the stop message.
Jerry also, Jerry reported about the aerospace Appalachian Skies project in the region. Something that would be very important in transportation. You may sometimes just write down the Appalachian Skies website, and it covers this region, including all the Huntington area, and great surveys have been done, assessments have been done. City of Huntington worked with it, as well as the other city of Ashland and others, to have this region identified as an aerospace-friendly area for manufacturing, which meant it had the appropriate types of machine shops and tool and die makers and workforce and training programs to make it excellent for the aerospace industry, which is extremely important for Brady industries coming in. But this region is more and more being looked at, so people need to be thinking about the transportation role in developing the aerospace industry. So to look on the Appalachian Skies and kind of get an overview of the special website we set up for economic development of the aerospace industries of the Huntington Ashland region.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, I really do appreciate everyone. I'll see you on Friday. And we have the MOU discussion right after this meeting. Anything else?
I thought we were a break for lunch.
It's at 1. Well, yeah, we need to figure out what we're doing. I mean, scheduled for 1 is after 12 now.
Well, originally, I think the invite was that we were going to start at 1 o'clock and break for lunch. So I guess can leave it up to whoever if we want to work straight through and then you all to go about your way afterward, or no, not everybody. Just
okay.
Just a specific MOU for you. So
we can talk about it.
Yeah. So you all want to? I mean.
Okay.
Okay.
Move to the turn. Somebody.
what the status of it is, but I do know they have a demo project.
Yes, that's right.
They have a demo.